I really see this as a relighting of rural America.
This is episode 225 of the Community Broadband Bits podcast from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. I'm Lisa Gonzalez. There's a project taking shape in rural Southwest Michigan and the nearby regions of Indiana and Ohio. It's headed up by the Midwest Energy Cooperative. At the recent Broadband Communities Economic Development Conference in Minneapolis, Chris ran into Bob Hance, president and CEO of the cooperative, and Dave Allen, the cooperative's vice president of regulatory compliance. Naturally, we wanted to hear more about their project and share the details with you. They provide some history and how access to high-quality connectivity has positively impacted a number of their rural members. Chris, Bob, and Dave also have some interesting thoughts on federal funding programs, project standards, and the different rules for cooperatives and big corporate providers. Learn more about the project at teamfiber.com, where you can also discover more about the cooperative. Now, you may notice some background noise. We apologize in advance. While we advocate for local choice and access to technology, sometimes technology is just not on our side. We had a little trouble with the mic that day. Also, Chris is suffering from allergies, and until winter sets in, he may sound a little like the late Howard Cosell, but never fear, it is our Christopher. Now here with Chris are Bob Hance, President and CEO, and Dave Allen, Vice President of Regulatory Compliance from Midwest Energy Cooperative.
Welcome to another edition of the Community Broadband Bits podcast. I'm Chris Mitchell, and today I'm speaking with two folks from Michigan, Bob Hance, the president and CEO of Midwest Energy Cooperative. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Dave Allen, the vice president of regulatory compliance for the cooperative. Welcome to the show.
Yep. Thanks, Chris. Good to see you out in Minneapolis.
Yes, Dave, it was terrific to run into you and to learn more about your approach.
Not many people say that, Chris.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to be the one. Now, your cooperative is really leading Michigan in terms of delivering high-quality internet access. Can you tell us about your regions that you serve?
Yeah, I can touch on the areas that we serve and set that up. And Bob does a great job of kind of talking about our history and communication space. Midwest Energy serves 12 counties, 8 of those in Michigan, 3 in Indiana, and another 2 in Ohio. So, you know, we have two distinct service areas, one in southeast Michigan and one in southwest Michigan. The areas we're really focusing on in terms of our initial phase of this project is the southwest Michigan district. And that's an area that's kind of characterized by Notre Dame down in Indiana and South Bend. And you can kind of go in a northeasterly direction toward Kalamazoo and southwest Michigan. We're kind of those counties that fall in between that space. The area is really kind of identified by Whirlpools, World Headquarters. Kellogg World Headquarters is nearby in Battle Creek. We've got old Pfizer up in Kalamazoo, a lot of industry that is in the area but not in our direct service footprint. You know, the areas that we serve are kind of more rural areas, more characterized by seed corn industry, and perhaps to the south, the RV industry. My point being is that we're extremely rural. We probably serve about 8 members per mile. But we do have large industry that's an area that lives in our service footprint and really have a need for access to high-speed broadband.
I have to point out that after talking with some of the telephone cooperatives here in Minnesota, 8 people a mile seems it's a positive luxury in some cases.
In terms of, you know, municipals are 60-some-odd, I believe, customers per mile. Investor-owned utilities kind of run in the 30 members per mile or customers per mile range. At 8 customers per mile, that's still pretty rural.
I think that a rule of thumb has been that you make money when you have 11 people per linear mile or more with a private sector business plan, but not if you have less than 11 people per mile. But let's talk about your history of offering communication services.
Technically, we've been in an active ISP since the mid-90s. That was all brought upon by a relationship that we had with Trans World Network. We provided third-party long distance as well as ISP services through dial-up. As the internet progressed and people became more and more in tune with all things related to the electronic world and personal computers, and the mobile devices that we have today, obviously dial-up service was just not going to be the thing in the future. So over time, we've had many, many folks that have left that to go to other options, including satellite, which we ventured into providing terrestrial broadband, thinking that that was going to be a possible solution to the rural space that we were in and a good replacement for dial-up. Unfortunately, we ran into problems such as limited band availability in the service territories that we were trying to serve. We had numbers of people who had signed up for that service, but were let down because the capacity of the satellite just wasn't going to meet the demand. And even though they launched the second satellite, we ran into the same problem with that and eventually moved on to phase number three, I guess, if you will, in
sure.
trying to provide rural America with some semblance of broadband, and that was broadband over power line. We were one of nine co-ops that were involved with a company called IBEC, that was the single source provider of equipment and a process that would provide a signal across the power line. So an injection on our current equipment that sounded very promising as well. Unfortunately, we were 2 years into it and finally started to get past some of the technical issues that came with broadband over power lines when they announced, IBEC announced that they were bankrupt. That was back in 2011, December. So here we have like 600 people that had been hooked up, or a few hundred people that had hooked up both on satellite and broadband over power line. And instead of abandoning them entirely, we just went back to the drawing board and said, what's next? Interestingly enough, at the same time, separate from communications, our utility folks, which includes me, were kicking around what we were going to do with respect to our needs and communications for the electric space. We have an active SCADA system. We know what's going to happen with the further smartening of the grid. So clearly, utilities have been using various forms of communications between substations and their corporate offices and headquarters to get data back from the field. Eventually, the light comes on, and we say, if we put in this system, this fiber system, we take care of our utility needs, and at the same time, we can leverage that with the opportunity to replace what we've been trying to do by providing a true broadband to our membership, which married quite well together, I can say.
Well, it's interesting because I think almost all electric utilities are involved in communications for internal needs, but there's a split between those who see themselves purely as an electricity co-op and not interested in doing anything externally, and then those that see themselves as more technology-driven and bringing the technology of the day to their members. Is that your experience?
Well, I think you're right. I think you're spot on. I think that's the kind of the conversations that have been had across the country. But the way I like to see it is we're doing what's required, I guess, to continue to serve our membership in a relevant way. And I'll just exercise that a little bit by saying, if not for the insistence of them for the last several years that we look at ways to provide them the service, I don't know that we would have. I think our principal responsibility and a duty is to our membership. And if the membership is asking us to consider other products and services that makes being in a part of the rural landscape more enjoyable, more affordable, more reasonable for them, that's what we ought to do.
Dave, do you have anything to add on that?
Yeah, you know, just to add to that, we don't have an annual meeting per se, but we have district meetings where Bob goes out and engages our membership. And over the course of probably the last 3 or 4 years, the questions trended away from anything having to deal with electricity and more toward, you know, can you provide a broadband solution? And we have a lot of folks out here that are on air cards. I think there's still some people on dial-up and folks utilizing satellite, frustration with usage allowances, you know, with cost, with reliability, all these things that kind of enter into the equation. They're just kind of tired and fed up with that. So, you know, increasingly they have asked us to enter that communication space where, you know, in all honesty, we were very comfortable remaining, you know, an electric co-op. So we're a little bit of a reluctant participant, but there's a lot of things going on with respect to energy too, and Bob touched on some of the smart grid things we're doing. We have to do a better job of helping people manage their energy use better, so this is one component of that.
Now, I understand that you're not alone, that there's other cooperatives in Michigan that are interested in working together to improve internet access.
We're working in conjunction with the other electric co-ops in Michigan. There are nine of us specifically. A number of them are going through this process of evaluating from a conceptual standpoint, you know, maybe moving forward. They're doing their due diligence. There are some surveys that have been presented to their memberships. At least three of them are fairly active in this process, but of course, you know, it takes a little bit of time for them to walk through that. So I think it's promising. I think they understand that we're here to help in any way. We're the obviously the example that's on their way with already building a project. So we're a ready resource and a valuable resource, I think, in their process. So we'll see where it goes.
Thanks, Bob. I'm also curious if there's a difference in your members across different states in terms of appetites for dealing with delivering broadband, or if the interest is pretty similar.
Chris, I think there's interest from all kinds of areas, even those co-ops that are serving closer to the suburban areas. What everyone understands, and I think you get this firsthand, is, you know, when kind of the Google showed up with this whole idea of Google-fying a city or Google-fibering a city, and that whole contest that went on for the better part of 2 years, I think, kind of raised the specter of, well, what does this mean, fiber, and what can this provide versus what we already have, and this notion of this being like the technology that passes every other technology easily, and to the extent that you can say future-proof, it is. It just seems like I don't think there's any end to the desire of folks, not even just our own membership, and I'll touch on that a little bit, but even beyond our membership, that really would like to get connected to fiber. And if you look at who is signing up on our website, it's probably basically 3-1 right now. So for every three members that we have signing up to take service from us, we have a person signing up that is not an electric member of ours, but is close enough to see what we're doing and hoping that they can get connected as well.
Ah, interesting. So you're getting pressure to expand even to people that aren't members of the co-op at this point then?
Yes, very much so. It's probably one of the hardest things for us to manage towards is this demand that's outside or external to our current footprint. And that's the strong desire for all these other peoples to get connected to.
I think that there are two key questions that come up. And Dave, I'd like to direct this to you first. In terms of a project like this, how do you finance it? And there's a context here that rural areas have too little demand, and that if you wanted to deliver high-quality internet access to them, it would be too costly. So how do you make it work?
Well, in terms of your first question, how we're financing the project through member equity, we reached out to USDA, RUS, the Rural Utility Service, because, as Bob mentioned earlier, we were looking at our need for communications, better communications, utilizing fiber. And so we talked with the RUS about improving our communications, utilizing fiber through our substations, through our facilities, and ultimately to the member home. And they agreed that was a good purpose for us to pursue. You're looking at the Clean Power Plan in the very near future in terms of what the ramifications might be to the users of electricity, also within the state of Michigan, looking at a new energy bill, and our need really to help people manage their energy use better going forward. So that did resonate with the RUS, and ultimately we're financing this project through an RUS work plan loan through the electric side. So that provides us the equity to pursue this project, which is going to be deployed over 5 years, running about 400 miles of fiber a year. And as we're connecting homes, looking at those folks that would enjoy a voice or a data drop. So it's kind of an integrated project. Again, smart grid communications first and foremost for utility purposes, and then voice and data drops beyond that. You know, our financial modeling bears out the fact that, you know, we'll be cash positive after 3 years of building out our project. So we're very confident that despite the fact we're in rural areas, you know, there's an ability to, say, realize a profit for the entity so that, you know, beyond the 5 years, we can begin looking at those areas,
that are not an immediate part of our service footprint. So it's been a very good and very positive project for us, and certainly resonates with members and non-members alike.
Let's clarify the rural utility service financing. And in clarifying that, it's that this is loan financing, right?
Yeah, correct. You know, we did receive a small rural broadband experiment through the SEC. Bob's been very engaged in the past, advancing the notion that non-traditional providers of broadband services should be considered in the Connect America Fund. And as part of that, we applied for that rural broadband experiment, received a little more than $200,000. Probably the better part of that was just becoming eligible for the CAF Phase 2 auctions, which will hopefully happen sometime in 2017. So for the most part, yes, we are doing this through member equity. But there is an opportunity, say, to engage CAF Phase 2 and receive some funding that will help us really kind of build out a little bit faster and perhaps consider some of the folks in those census blocks that we build out to that are not members of Midwest Energy.
Now, Bob, I really want to make this very clear for everyone that even though it took a tremendous amount of investment to take electricity to everyone, I don't think that it really costs the American taxpayers very much.
Not trying to mix things together too much here. We have roughly $120 million of plant, and I like to say that I remind folks that it took us 80 years to build. What's interesting about this project is although we are telling people that we're going to build 2,000 miles of fiber from scratch, and we're going to do it in 5 years, it doesn't seem to be fast enough. So, and the fact that it's nearly a $60 million investment. So, yeah, I mean, it can be done. With the help of RUS, with respect to seeing the need and the opportunity with as Dave was projecting to you, the notion of smart grid and getting connections all the way to the home so we can deal with in-home devices at some time in the future is invaluable.
That's right. But the point that I really want to hit on is that when the federal government is giving out loans, the budgetary impact is quite small compared to other programs. The electric co-ops, they receive billions of dollars of loans followed by billions of dollars in repayments over many years, over decades. The interest rate may have been subsidized, but overall, this type of program seems like a very reasonable investment.
When you think about a bang for the buck, I can't imagine that there's another federal program that you could point to that has been as successful or as deeply as successful as the REARUS program, bar none.
That's what I want to hear.
You think about this over time and what was accomplished with loan dollars, as you pointed out, maybe subsidized a little bit with respect to the interest rates. But when you see what we've accomplished and what we continue to accomplish with those loan dollars, and now carrying on the kind of the tradition as we did with the electric system, now with another product that's becoming more and increasingly important in the mix with respect to services to folks, we're just repeating what we did back in the 30s.
Now, you mentioned the CAF $2, and that's one of the ways that the Federal Communications Commission is giving out these grants. But as we move into the final question of the show, I want to talk about the response from your members to your service. But first, let's just finish the CAF $2 discussion by noting that the FCC has just given, without any hope of repayment, I mean, these are just grants, billions of dollars to the biggest private telephone companies so they can build out to the obsolete 10 megabit down, 1 megabit up standard. Now, you all got $200,000 to deliver much faster connections. Now, do your members appreciate the difference between what you're doing versus what that 10 megabit by 1 megabit minimum is?
Chris, I think, unfortunately, most folks don't get it. Most folks don't understand what's really happening with Universal Service Fund and now CAF. I think there would be a countrywide outcry. I think you'd have pitchforks and other things arriving in our nation's capital if they knew what we know. Dave and I, having gone in the FCC for the last almost 4 years now, and seeing firsthand how quickly it is to throw $30 billion through the fan without ever a second thought to what are we getting for the $30 billion other than, second-class citizenry for our folks getting 10-1 when the rest of the country is moving towards these other standards. It's close to being criminal. I kind of fashion it to be, you're just shoved one of those metal objects into a sore part of my mouth. It's just crazy. even with CAF II and the struggles that we've had to help them get rules in place so that they can have the stupid auction in the first place, and all the restrictions on $2 billion that they'd never put on the $30 billion, it's just crazy. It's ludicrous.
Dave, let me jump in quick before you respond. And I just want to make sure people understand that making loan guarantees to co-ops requires a 10% budget hit. And that's to say that doing $30 billion in loan guarantees requires budgeting only $3 billion. The $30 billion that is being misused from the CAF, from the Connect America Fund, that could have wired the entire country if it was spent in co-op loan guarantees. All right, so now, Dave, can you please pile on?
My only point in talking about the $30 billion, which has gone out the last 15 months to the price cap carriers and rate of return carriers, is to kind of point back to conversation I had with Dana McKenzie, who's the chief of Minnesota's broadband office, and they've set an appropriate benchmark there of 25 download and 3 up, it was kind of statewide in terms of what they're promoting within the state of Minnesota, which is the national broadband standard. But of course, that 30 billion went out with the only expectation that they build out to a 10-1 standard. And so I had that chat with her. Are you frustrated? Are you disappointed? And she said immensely so. If the FCC from a policy standpoint had the intestinal fortitude to set that standard at 25-3, they essentially would have realized their goal well ahead of the date that they had set, which I think was 2020 to hit that standard. So I know, our frustration in going in and chatting with the FCC is, let's not set it at 10-1, let's at least set it at the broadband standard at 25-3, so that we can kind of incent people to build out better networks like fiber going forward.
It's worth noting that that Minnesota requirement is not only 25 megabits by 3, but that you also have to be using a technology that can scale all the way up to 100 megabits. And I think that's a really good approach.
Chris, I think that's consistent with the New York standard now, too.
I think that it's important to make sure that we're wisely investing so we don't have to spend more in like 3 more years for a new round of upgrades on networks that we've just subsidized. But I want to end on a more positive note. Dave, can you give us a testimonial from your members explaining why this is so important?
Yeah. I mentioned that when we were out in Minneapolis, and we've actually taken over 100 pages of testimonials into the FCC and left them with commissioner offices because they do resonate. I mean, they hear from us, but to hear from our members, to hear from customers, to hear from folks in the rural space, really resonates with those folks. And even now when we go back out there, they ask if we've updated that because we get these testimonials daily. My favorite, and I'll let Bob chime in with a couple of his, this person from Edwardsburg said, "We're so pleased with Midwest as we thought this service would never come down our dirt lane off of a dirt road." And I think that really kind of explains what it is we're doing. We're not going out to the urban areas, the areas of high density. We came down a dirt lane off of a dirt road to provide this person with gigabit capable fiber.
And Bob, do you also have one that you'd like to share?
The one that's striking to me is this one. It says, another customer that's hooked up now, "When you live out in the country, you learn that not all things are easy, not all things are accessible at a moment's notice. The country teaches you patience and understanding. Today, with the blink of an eye, something that I was told would never happen to the rural people. We have internet, not by tether of a phone or an air card with an astronomical price tag on it. Thank you, Midwest Connections, for being the stand-up people that you said you were. I cannot tell you thank you enough."
I'd just add, Chris, too, it's interesting how life-changing this is for people in our area. They've been used to, again, poor service, dial-up service, and to have fiber optic available to them has been just amazing for them. And it's taken me by surprise, in all honesty.
There's a certain class of people, though, that live in cities and might be thinking, what do I get out of it if they have better internet access out there in the country? Now, my answer is a thought experiment, which is, what if we did not electrify the country with the REA, the Rural Electrification Administration, and we thereby saved maybe billions of dollars, a few billions of dollars in federal budgeting over many decades, maybe. I mean, we don't even know that we would save that much. But if we did, we'd also end up with smaller markets. We wouldn't have people being as productive in the rural areas, and they would not be buying things that other people are producing. And my point is that this is not charity. It's in my self-interest as someone living in the St. Paul to make bigger markets everywhere, because we're going to have a better economy.
We're seeing for the first time in our nation's history the fact that rural areas are losing population. And as they continue to, you know, bursts aren't keeping up with the rural outflight. And as people move back, say, to cities and urban centers to avail themselves of services like broadband, that's going to tax those urban centers from an infrastructure standpoint. So, you know, that's that should be a concern to rural areas, or excuse me, urban areas, in terms of how you maintain roads and sewer systems and things like that as people move back to cities.
I'd like to remind folks, but for rural electrification and now this new valuable service with respect to particularly how farms operate today, you know, we have the food out here. We're the producers.
Yeah, the food doesn't just magically appear in cans then, I guess, huh?
Yes, exactly.
That's a good reminder. I'm excited by your project, and I really want to thank you for joining us on the call. Thank you very much.
Chris, you know, we have reminders of our past scattered throughout our office of when we were constructing, when this co-op was constructing the lines back in the 30s. And one that's really striking to me is a lady who's reaching up to turn on that light bulb for the first time. And that's exactly what this feels like to all of us. And it's really helpful to get the kind of affirmations that we're getting from members. But I really see this as a relighting of rural America.
Yes, I'm with you. And you know, I think sometimes people say that this isn't as big as electricity. But when electricity was first rolling out, people didn't know where that was going to go either. So I think you're doing the right thing. What we have to do is make wise investments and then let time do its thing.
I like to think that we spend once. Build once, spend once.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
That was Chris talking with Bob Hance, President and CEO from Midwest Energy Cooperative, and Dave Allen, Vice President of Regulatory Compliance from the cooperative. Remember, we have transcripts for this and other Community Broadband Bits podcasts available at muninetworks.org/broadbandbits. Email us at podcast@muninetworks.org with your ideas for the show. Follow Chris on Twitter. His handle is @communitynets. Follow muninetworks.org stories on Twitter. The handle is @muninetworks.org. Subscribe to this podcast and all of the podcasts in the ILSR podcast family. You can do it on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Never miss out on our original research. You can also subscribe to our monthly newsletter at ilsr.org. Thank you to the group Mojo Monkeys for their song Bodacious, licensed through Creative Commons. And thanks for listening to episode 225 of the Community Broadband Bits podcast.